How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. My name is Ann Baldwin, and I'm here in the radio studios of Baldwin Media, where we put the show together. And we got a little switch up today. It's Bring Your Daughter to Work Day, and it's also co-host day with my good friend, Beth Connor. Beth, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ann. Glad to be here.
You've been on the show so many times, and you're the force behind it because you always set up all of our great guests, and we'll get to our next guest in a little bit, which I'm very excited about. So how are you guys at The Connection hanging in?
Me too.
Yes.
We're hanging in there.
Are you?
We're hanging in there. Yeah, the new normal. So
yeah.
I think we're all getting used to working from home, and, you know, that's what everyone's doing. So, you know, it's you have the same conversations with folks about their pets and their kids, and we're all just muddling through and getting the work done and caring for our clients as best we can. And, of course, we do have a number of our staff that are working on the front lines with our staff in our residential programs and others. So I'm fortunate that I have the flexibility to work both in the office at home, but some of our staff are out there with all their protective equipment working with clients. So,
well, you know,
we want to give kudos to absolutely, them.
Absolutely, absolutely, because there's just some things that, you know, for lack of a better term, are hands-on. You know, people think, well, you know, we can work remotely. A lot of people can, but there's a lot of positions in this world that you can't.
Right.
And these right. are essential workers. I mean, there are a lot of essential workers out there that have still had to, you know, just kind of suit up and continue doing what they're doing. I got to tell you, I cannot work from home. I don't have the mentality. I've got to get up. I got to dress up. I got to show up. So I'm fortunate that my office building here in New Britain has pretty much been shut down, and I've got my own separate floor here, so I don't have to worry about, you know, other people coming in and out. So I've pretty much been here.
It does take some discipline.
Yeah, yeah, I bet it does. And, you know, the other thing about it is, you know, just because you're working from home, I've heard and talked to a lot of people, including you and Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, I don't think a lot of us have ever worked harder during these times.
That's true. We were talking about it the other day in the office and saying that we don't even get up to stretch our legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once we're in the mode and we're sitting here at our computers in our offices, we just go, 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 go.
Yep.
And, you know, you don't have the, you don't have colleagues to, you know, chat with. You don't get up and make yourself a cup of coffee like you would if you were in the office. It's a whole different routine. And so we're all trying to get used to that as well. But we are finding that we're productive and getting things done. And I guess that's the point.
That is.
To continue doing our work.
Yep. Well, I know one thing that's kept me busy is here at Baldwin Media, two of my clients are the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education and the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. So schools have always been on my list as far as generating public relations for them. But I found that, you know, during all of this, because public education and remote learning has been such a hot topic, that I am just busier than busy trying to, you know, book these folks on as guests. Many of these people have been involved in the reopening planning, if you will, because one of the things that I will give the governor credit for is that a lot of the decisions on remote education and when and if we open up our schools, he's included people that really work in that arena when it comes to that. So yeah. Dental hygienists or yeah. hairstylists yeah. and things like that. But today what we're really focusing on is public education, and it's just so fun that we get to have your daughter, Amanda Connor, on. And Amanda is a sixth grade math teacher and has really been, and I haven't talked to anybody from this perspective, which is really interesting, about how things are going. How do you switch from the classroom to technology? And that's what we're going to talk to Amanda about. So, Amanda, thank you for agreeing to be on the program with Mom.
Thank you for having me. And I have to say, at home, she's my colleague. So we're sharing spaces here. So that adds another perspective, too.
It does. So, Amanda, tell us a little bit about, you know, what was it like before all of this? What, you know, what was a normal day in the sixth grade classroom as a math teacher? What was that like? What was your day like?
Well, you know, we had all of our routines set. You know, this happened in March, and we were three quarters of the way through the year. So, you know, kids would attend their classes every day. They would socialize. You know, we would have classroom discussions. We do a lot of group work and things of that sort. And, you know, we don't have that anymore. We've had to get really creative in how we're delivering instruction because all of the routines and all of the techniques that we're used to using won't work when you're teaching remotely.
And I know that when the decision was made to teach remotely, that you all had to get a crash course in all these new systems. So
yeah.
Talk a little bit about the technology involved and really the learning curve that all the teachers had to gain.
So when we announced we were closing, students went home on a Friday, and then we had a half day professional development that Friday and then the following Monday. So we kind of just explored different resources we can use. We are a Google district, so we've been using Google Classroom to post our content each day and for students to upload assignments. We've been using Google Meets, which is kind of like Zoom, you know, so we can meet virtually with our students. But, I mean, we really had to upheave our curriculum in a matter of days and figure out how we were going to deliver it online.
Wow. Well, I remember the first call that I got was from Stratford Public Schools. The superintendent there, Janet Robinson, said she had one of the first suspected cases of a student with COVID. And
Wow.
Yeah, so they obviously had to shut down. And then there was the speculation, well, when will you reopen? And the reality was they didn't reopen, and everybody else followed suit, and everybody closed. So I would think, you know, technology, you sound like, you know, you're a young teacher, right, Amanda? How long have you been teaching?
Yeah, 5 years.
5 years. So I've
yeah.
worked long enough with school systems to know that, you know, there's younger talent coming into school systems, but there's also a lot of people that are still talented but have been around a while, and technology doesn't necessarily come, you know, second nature like it does to people, you know, of your generation. So how hard
oh,
was
sure.
that? Yeah, how hard was that, you know, for folks to adjust?
Incredibly. I mean, I'm fortunate that, you know, I am newer to the profession, so I was already using a lot of technology resources. I just kind of had to get creative in how to use them more. But I know some of my colleagues were learning from square one, you know, and some people don't feel comfortable being on video. One of my teammates wasn't even using Google Classroom prior, but said, I need to start using it because everyone else is. So I think everyone's just taking it day by day. We have a really great support system with our administration and the technology department. So we've all just kind of been working together to help each other learn new tools and explore them and deliver our instruction the best way we can right now.
And what about the students, Amanda? So how are they dealing with the new technology and logging in and, you know, working differently?
The first few weeks were a little rough. I know, you know, no one was used to it yet, and we didn't know how long this would be going on. But we all just kept communicating with families and students and helping them out. Now a lot are thriving, which surprised me, surprised all of us. You know, they're logging on every day, they're asking questions, they're attending class virtually, and, you know, they're really thriving, but there are kids who are struggling. I mean, we're going through such a difficult time right now, and, you know, we don't know what situations are happening at home, but I can imagine that there's other stressors that are affecting their progress right now, too. But, you know, we're just trying to do our best to support them the best we can. We have our support team at school with counselors, administrators, school nurse, and, you know, everyone's just trying to reach out and to those students who are struggling and make sure that they're still receiving education.
Right, and there's so many different dynamics here. You know, I know initially there might not be, you know, two or three laptops at the home. They might not even have internet access. And I know, like, for my sister in Colorado, who is homeschooled all of her kids, you know, for as long as I can remember, which I always thought she was weird for that, but now we're all doing it, right? Is that it's really, it's here you are, a sixth grade math teacher, and I know even for, like, my granddaughter, who's in second grade, sometimes you still need parental or guardian involvement. It's not something where you just go tell your kid, hey, go log on and get your work done. Or go to class.
Oh, of course.
There's got to be supervision. There's got to be assistance, and not everybody has that.
Well, and it's difficult, too, with a lot of parents are working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're trying to balance making sure their students are doing what they need to do and also doing their jobs.
And I can imagine, too, especially with, you know, you talk about how, let's say, for example, if it's Google or if it's Zoom, there's still a visual there. And,
right.
You know, like you said, there's distractions going on in the home. Not everybody gets their own space. I mean, I'm sure a lot of teachers are seeing some pretty amazing and not necessarily great stuff when it comes to, you know, you're actually going into somebody's home, a place that you might not have ever been before.
Right. It's been weird, you know, and they're seeing our home, too. My cat interrupted my meeting this morning with my students, just jumped on in, and everyone loves to introduce their pets and their siblings, you know, but I know students have had to watch their siblings in addition with school. It's a totally different world.
What do you think, Amanda, that the long-term educational impact of this might be on students? Do you think they're getting what they need right now, or do you think that they're going to be at a deficit when schools reopen?
I mean, you know, we've been discussing this constantly, all of my colleagues. We're still pushing our curriculum. We are teaching, but it's at a much slower pace. So, you know, we're already planning next year for what skills students might have missed and how we can remediate them. You know, I'm looking at what fifth grade skills did they not get to that I need to teach them before we can move on to sixth grade content. And, you know, we're not doing end of year testing. We don't know. We don't have a benchmark for them for where they're at like we usually do. We can't deliver those in this platform. So I think we're all expecting students to be behind next year. But I know all teachers are saying, you know, we will catch them up and we just have to do what we have to do, knowing that everyone has not gotten the same quality of instruction that they would have if they were in school.
What are students missing out on? What are teachers missing out on? What's the, you know, the downside of this? I know there's a lot of things, but what strikes you the most?
You know, I've learned so much about, you know, how important it is to have students interact with each other and how important that is into their growth and development and their learning. Specifically in math, there's been a lot of recent discussions about how student discourse is important in developing their math skills, and it's really hard to do that virtually. You know, even if they're coming to their virtual classroom on our video chat, it's, you know, you can't put them into groups and have them discuss. So, you know, they're missing those social aspects in the classroom and out of the classroom. I know in one of their classes they had a big project to complete, and it was kind of like a famous project for sixth grade that they do every year, and we were saying we were sad we didn't get to see them walk down the hallways, you know, with their projects and have those presentations in person. We had to cancel our field trip. You know, those things that kids remember, I think, from schools are what we're missing out on right now, is those experiences.
But you talk about kids missing out, and you do miss out. You miss out on some of those milestones and some of those memories of, you know, being excited about lunchtime so you can sit next to your buddy and catch up.
Right.
Those days are probably going to be over. You know, going out to recess and being able to play on the playground. Who knows if that's going to resume again. So it's just, it's like a lot of things. Like getting your nails done is no longer going to be a luxury item. You're going to, I think you're going to feel like, I don't know what you're going to feel like because I haven't done it yet. But I can't wait until they reopen. So even getting your hair done, you know, is it, you're going to be there like you're in a third world, you know, outer space movie with people with masks and shields on. And boy, things are going to just look different. I mean, you've got to, you've got to think ahead to that, Amanda, and go, what in the heck's going to, what's next?
You know, we usually we have, you know, sort of a step up day at the end of the year where students will go to their next grade, kind of get an introduction. But we've had to think about, well, what is our class going to look like in the fall? We don't know. So we don't really know what we're going to tell incoming students as far as this is what we're going to do. It's all up in the air right now.
And we don't know if we're going back to virtual in the fall, correct? They haven't made any decisions yet.
No, no decisions have been made. I know they're talking about all different possibilities, but, you know, we're trying to plan now, but we just can't. We don't know what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. And I think with this soft opening and things slowly rolling out, that's going to really be, you know, what determines what's next and what next looks like, because we just don't know. I mean, there's so many, you know, speculation that this could come back again in the fall. We don't know what we're dealing with. Where are we at on the vaccine? So, you know, we just, I think, like anything else, you just got to kind of take it one day at a time. One of the other things that I found was interesting too, Amanda, is that there is this perception that, you know, schools are saving a ton of money right now, right? Because, you know, they're not feeding kids in the lunchroom, you know, they don't have the lights on and all the utilities and all that. But that I have found not to be true, because they still are feeding kids. A lot of these kids are still getting, you know, the meals from the school programs. And this is a really a great expense to treat, to be able to teach remotely, right? It's not cheap.
No, I do know that a lot of educational resources have opened up for free or discounted prices for teachers, just knowing that, you know, we need to start pulling together resources. But I know our district, and I think most, are providing pickup lunches and meals for families. And, you know, we're still doing professional development. We're still trucking forward. So it's, I don't think it would be less cost. I don't know if it's necessarily more.
And what do you think about, you know, the screen time? Because we've always, you know, we've always said, you know, get away from that computer screen. Enough is enough. But now, you know, kids are going to school online, and you can't tell me that that doesn't mean they're not, you know, watching their YouTube videos and playing their games. So now they're in front of these computer screens even more than they were before.
Definitely going to have some long-term effects, but we are fortunate that we have those tools to instruct in our district. But I don't know what it's going to do in the long term.
So, you know, I think it's interesting for people out there to get a reality check from somebody who's actually in the profession and has had to make this transformation like you have, Amanda. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Amanda Connor, who is a sixth grade math teacher. What is your advice? Because this probably isn't going to go away anytime soon. For people out there listening, maybe you're a grandparent, maybe you're a parent, you know, how can we better, you know, support our kids? And what do you think parents need to know that they might not be thinking about right now?
Parents need to not put so much pressure on themselves. You know, their teachers are still here. We want to help. You know, we're encouraging students to reach out to us, but I know younger ones probably a little more difficult. You know, reach out to your student, reach out to their teachers and ask them for help. You know, we're here to do that. And we are concerned about our kids, whether we see them in front of us every day or we don't. And we want to do what we can to help them. So, you know, I would just say not to worry about being their teacher, and to just contact your child's teacher and really just communicate. Communication has been really a big help during this time.
And support your student, right? check in and sit next to them. Take
absolutely
take the time to go over the homework and to go over the lessons. And although I got to tell you, thank goodness that my kids are grown and gone, because if I had to sit down and probably figure out sixth grade math today, I bet I couldn't do it.
It's all different now, Ann.
Yeah, it is.
I know.
It's all different.
I always told parents, I said, if I wasn't teaching, I wouldn't know this either. let me help them.
Yeah, exactly. Now, some people have even suggested that maybe kids should, you know, kind of rewind, you know, go back and not progress to the next grade. What do you think about that, Amanda?
I've heard that conversation. You know, they did get through three quarters of the year. You know, mm-hmm. we got through more than half. We are still continuing our curriculum. Obviously, it's a different quality and a different platform, but, you know, I feel like that would just cause more trauma, you know, having them have to then redo the year again. I think knowing everyone's just going to be a little behind and we're going to have to embed some remediation in the beginning of the year is just going to be a reality. I don't know that keeping them behind would be beneficial in the long run.
Mm. Do you think summer programs would help?
Yeah, I know we're not sure in our school if summer school is going to happen. But if it is, I know that they're going to be looking at the skills that we haven't been able to cover or haven't been able to cover as well. And they're going to look to do some practice on those specific skills for those students.
So, Beth, you and Amanda, you said share a workspace sometimes. So it must be interesting to see, you know, how this has actually transformed into an online classroom. You've witnessed it.
Well, this is interesting because, of course, Amanda was in school not too long ago, too. So as a mom, I'm seeing this whole transformation here, right? So she was a student, and now she's a teacher. And what I can say is that these teachers are putting in a lot of work. They're being very creative. They are brainstorming with one another, talking with one another constantly to come up with new ways to engage the students. It's really tough. And, you know, I hear her on the phone if I walk by her office, and I hear her with her students, and it warms my heart. They love the interaction because they're not getting a whole lot of interaction. You know, obviously they're not with their friends and other teachers. So all they have is this one touch point per day, and it's heartwarming to hear, you know, Amanda converse with them. It is difficult sometimes. I know, right, Amanda, when we first started this, she's upstairs, I'm downstairs, but we're both on the loud side, I'm just saying, and she yelled down to me on a break, hey, you're a little loud down there on the phone, I can hear you up here. So, you know, we've had to modify our work at home just to make sure that we keep our lives separate, but, you know, we've managed.
Well, one of you is in a place where there are birds chirping, and I'm so jealous. So who is that? Which one do you
outside.
Get? You're outside with the birds. Good for you.
It's gorgeous.
Good for you. Well, I can't wait to get out
there. That is one good thing of teaching remotely. I can bring my computer outside and teach outside if I want.
That gives you that versatility. Well, I think we've got just a few seconds left. It is a great time to thank all of our educators, you know, the support staff, the curriculum people, the administrators, the teachers, and applaud the students. You know, just give it your best shot. And it's going to take a lot of getting used to, but there are a lot of people out there that care. As you mentioned, Beth, you know how hard Amanda works. And so thank you for that, Amanda, because it's still, you know, it still has to happen. We still got to maintain our educational system because we won't even get into the fact that the financial piece of this has already gone to hell. So what else have we got? If we don't have anything if we don't have education, correct?
Yeah,
true.
Absolutely.
And I want to say I'm very proud of my teacher upstairs and all of the other teachers that are out there that are doing this work. It's difficult work. Under the best of circumstances, and, you know, this pandemic has made it that much more challenging, but necessary for the students and for their future. So thank you to all of you who have a part in this.
Absolutely. And we're out of time. Boy, this went by fast, but it was very enlightening and very interesting to hear it from another perspective. So, Amanda Connor, thank you for joining us. Beth, thank you for being here. It's always fun to chat with you as well. And more importantly, thank you for listening to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.